sure seems strange having Shiloh in the house that night, after trying so hard to keep him secret. Strange, too, the way Ma takes to him. Seems like she can't hardly pass his box next to the stove without reaching down to pet him, making low sympathy noises in her throat, the way she does when Daryl Lynn or Becky or me get sick. Dad don't say much. He come home to find Shiloh there, he just stands off to one side, listening to what Doc Murphy said about him. He don't get close enough for Shiloh to take a lick. But when supper's over and I go off to the bathroom to brush my teeth, I peek back through the doorway, and Dad's over by Shiloh's box, letting him lick his plate clean. Dad crouches there a minute or two, scratching all down Shiloh's back and up again. What I'm figuring, see, is by the time Shiloh's better, everybody will love him so much they just can't let him go, even Dad. I'm hoping Dad will go over to see Judd Travers, make him an offer for Shiloh, and then it'll be ours. The trouble with this kind of thinking, though, is we don't have the money. I'll probably be through junior high school almost before I earn enough to pay Doc Murphy's bill. To buy Shiloh from Judd, even if Judd's willing to sell, I'd have to collect aluminum cans all through high school, too. Can't make very much with cans. I try to think about what other kind of work I can do that would pay me more. But except for delivering the county paper on Friday afternoons, nothing else comes to mind. And somebody's got that job already. It's sort of like Shiloh's there, and he's not. And the next couple of days, everybody's petting him every chance they get. Becky feeds him the crusts off her toast, breaks off little bits, and shrieks every time she feels Shiloh's mouth slurp them out of her fingers. Ma's putting up beans in jars, and all the while she hums to Shiloh like he's a baby in a cradle, not a dog in a box. Daryl Lynn's got an old hairbrush, and she just can't seem to brush that dog enough. Even Dad sits down one evening and gets out every tick Shiloh's got on him, takes a little dab of turpentine and rubs it on the tick's rear end, and the tick backs out of Shiloh's skin mighty quick. The thing that makes it seem like Shiloh's not there is that nobody except me and Daryl Lynn and Becky talks about him. Ma and Dad don't even once mention his name out loud, as though saying it makes him ours, which he ain't. As though if you don't talk about him, maybe he'll disappear as quietly as he come that day in the rain. What everybody's waiting for, I guess, is something to happen. Every day, Shiloh's getting a little stronger. 2 days after Doc Murphy brought him here, Shiloh's up limping around on his bad leg. Ma put some papers beside his box for him to do his business on, but he won't. So for the first couple days, I pick him up, carry him out to the yard, and after he's done his business there, I bring him in again. But now, he's pushing open the back screen himself and going down into the yard, then coming back and tapping on the screen with one paw so we'll let him in. Somebody, sometime, is bound to see him. Becky, sometime, bound to say something. Even David Howard, when his ma came to pick him up the other day, opens his mouth right off and says something about Shiloh. "Who's Shiloh?" she asks. And David realizes he's let it slip. "Old stray cat," he says, and now I've got David lying. Worst part about having Shiloh here in the house where I can play with him any time I like is that it's hard to leave him when I go out collecting cans. But I've got to earn money now more than ever. So each day when Shiloh takes his long nap, I sit out with my plastic garbage bag hanging out one jeans pocket. One day I walk all the way to Friendly and ask at the grocery, where the county papers dropped, if they'll put in my name as a carrier. Mr. Wallace says he'll turn my name in, but he's already got six names ahead of me, and one of them is a grown man with a car. Don't see how I can match that. I study the bulletin board at the back of the store where people put up notices, stand on one foot and then the other reading the whole dang board, and seems like everybody got something to sell or want to be hired. Nobody wants to buy. Only two jobs listed, one for an appliance salesman and some woman who wants her house painted. Mr. Wallace sees me looking at the board, and he comes over and takes down the notice about a woman wanting her house painted. "That's already taken," he tells me. That night, while we finish supper, Shiloh's going around the table, putting his nose in everyone's lap, looking mournful, waiting for somebody to slip him something to eat. I can tell Ma and Dad's trying their best not to laugh. Ma won't let us feed him at the table. What I'm dying to ask Dad is, did he tell Judd Travers about his dog being here? Dad don't mention it, so I don't ask. Maybe I don't want to know, I tell myself. And then, just as Ma's dishing up a peach cobbler that we're going to eat hot with milk, I hear a sound outside that makes my bones feel like icicles inside me. Shiloh hears it too, and I know right away it's what I think it is, because Shiloh sticks his tail between his legs, puts his belly low to the floor, and climbs back into his box. Ma and Dad look at Shiloh. They look at each other. Then there's the slam of a truck door outside. Footsteps on the ground, footsteps on the porch, and a rap, rap, rap at the back door. Everybody stops eating, like we was all froze to death in our chairs. Dad gets up and turns on the porch light. And there he is, Judd Travers, looking as mean and nasty as I ever seen him look. He don't even ask can he come in, just opens the screen and steps inside.
Ray Preston, he says, somebody told me you got my dog.
Dad's looking serious. He nods and points toward the box by the stove.
Over there, Judd, but he's hurt. We've been taking care of him for you.
Judd stares at Shiloh and then at Dad.
Well, I'll be danged, he says, almost softly. Somebody knows my dog is missing, takes him in, and don't even have the decency to tell me.
We were going to tell you, Dad says, and he's looking straight at Judd.
Nobody wants to hear his dog's been hurt, though, and we wanted to make sure he was going to pull through.
Then he turns to me.
Marty, he says, you want to tell Mr. Travers how his dog come to be here?
He knows I don't. He knows I'd rather swim a river full of crocodiles than face Judd Travers. But it's my story to tell, not Dad's, and he always did make us face up to what we'd done. Your dog come over here twice because you've been mistreating it, I say, and my voice don't sound near as strong as Dad's. Sort of quavery. I clear my throat and go on. So, second time it come over, I built it a pen up in the woods and Dad didn't know it, and that German Shepherd of Baker's got in and fought Shiloh.
Fought who?
The Beagle. Shiloh. That's what I've been calling him. And Shiloh got hurt bad. It was my fault for not making the fence higher. We took him to Doc Murphy and he patched him up. Judd Travers is still staring around the room like he never saw the likes of us before. Finally, he lets out his breath through his teeth and slowly shakes his head.
And I got to find out all this from Doc Murphy.
I couldn't believe Doc would go tell him.
Somebody goes to the doc the other day and sees a beagle lying out on his back porch. Tells me about it later. Says he thinks maybe the dog's mine. So I ride over to Doc's this evening, and he tells me it was you who brought him in.
Judd walks across the kitchen, and at the thud of each footstep, Shiloh huddles down farther and farther in the box, like maybe he can make himself disappear. His whole body is shaking. Ma sees it, I know, because she watches for a minute, then turns her face away quick. Judd stares down at Shiloh, at his bandage in the shaved place where he's all stitched up, the rip on his ear.
Look what you done to my dog, he yells at me, eyes big and angry.
I swallow. Nothing I can say to that. Travers squats down by the box. He puts out his hand and Shiloh leans away like he's going to be hit. If that don't prove the way he treats him, I don't know what would. But Judd's saying,
I never mistreated my dogs. This one was shy when I got him, that's all. I sure never caused him an injury like this one. Wouldn't never have happened if you'd brought him back like I told you.
I close my eyes. When I open them again, Judd's putting his hand on Shiloh's head. Rough-like, sort of patting him, and you can tell he ain't got that much practice being kind. Still, hard to prove Shiloh wasn't mistreated before he got to Judd's. How do you go about proving something like that?
It was wrong of Marty to pin up your dog, Judd, and we've already talked about that, Dad says. He's the one who's going to pay Doc Murphy for patching him up, and soon as the dog is strong, we'll drive him over to your place. Why don't you let us keep him until then, in case he needs more care?
Judd stands up again and looks at me. I stare back, but I don't say nothing. And then Ma can't take it anymore. She says, Judd, Marty's got awful attached to that dog, and we'd like to know how much you want for it. Maybe we can scrape up the money to buy him. Judd looks at her like she's talking some kind of nonsense. Like we are all getting crazier by the minute.
That dog's not for sale, he says. Paid good money to get me a hunting dog, and he could be one of the best I've had. You want to keep and feed him till he's better? Okay with me. It's you that got him all tore up, and you paying the bill. But I want him back by Sunday. Screen door slams again. Truck starts up, and then he's gone.